Well, the last few verses we read together in Romans chapter 1 sounded something like this. Verse 16, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. For it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. For therein, or in that, is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith. As it is written, the just shall live by faith." The righteousness of God is revealed in the gospel. He sent his only begotten Son, Jesus Christ, who died for the sins of the whole world. Jesus died so that you and I could have life. You and I, all of us, no matter who you are or what you think about you, we have all sinned. And we deserve to be punished forever and ever. Because sin is simply missing the mark. We'll be separated from the Lord our God forever. Those who have never accepted Jesus Christ are still separated from God. The answer to it, the cure to it, is easy. Believe in your heart and confess with your mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord, the Son of the living God, and you shall be saved. But it's got to be an action. Belief that's real always causes an action. Now, he says, the righteousness is revealed from faith to faith. You accepted Jesus by faith. Ephesians chapter 2 tells you. Now you're going to walk in the Lord by faith. No other way. You know, some of you are trying to walk this tightrope. Got to keep the rules. Got to be on the right day. Got to be in the right, when the moon's got to be in the right position. And instead, you ought to be just saying, I'm free now. I can walk in the Lord. By faith, I come to Jesus. And in faith, I walk with him. The just shall live by faith. Now, we read in verse 18, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness." The wrath of God is revealed. In the Old Testament, straight water, hot though. In the Old Testament, people say this about God. Well, he was a God of wrath in the Old Testament. Man, he'd send you out and he'd wipe out your city, or he'd send his armies and they'd destroy. He was a God of wrath. And in the New Testament, he's a God of grace. The truth is, God has never changed and will not. Now, for those of you who would love to go in the ministry, whether you'd like to be a pastor or an assistant pastor or some sort of staff member, full-time ministry, or maybe in the mission field somehow, then this little story is for you. A young man, a long time ago, it's done differently nowadays, but years and years and years ago, when telegrams first were the rage, a young man was walking by the telegraph office, and he saw in the window help wanted. He went inside, and he spoke to the man behind the counter and said, I want a job. And the man said, well, you look pretty good. You look trustworthy. You look honest. Clean-cut kid. And the kid says, what do I have to do? And the man says, all you can do is deliver the telegrams. And back in those days, remember, they would bring them to your office or bring them to your home or bring them to wherever you were. And they'd find you. So the young man says, I could do that. I'll deliver them. Then the young man stopped and said, wait a minute. I'll only deliver good messages. Happy birthday to you, marriage proposals, the messages that say you've just won $1 million, or you're hired. I want to deliver those, but I will not, because of the way I am, I can't deal with this. See, I will not deliver any bad messages. So if you get a telegram of sickness, or the loss of a loved one, or trouble from somewhere, I won't deliver that. Well, you can figure that that young man didn't get the job, can't you? Because the job is you need to deliver these messages. Some of them may be good, some of them may not be good, but you need to deliver them. Those of you that want to go into ministry, sometimes you've got to deliver a real good message, and sometimes that message may be of a loss of love. It may be a negative message. Well, listen, this is not so positive. Let me read it to you. The wrath of God is revealed from heaven. What shows you God's wrath, first of all, think about it, is Jesus on the cross. How does God feel about sin? He hates it so much that He would send His Son, because He loves you and me, that He would send His Son to walk through this earth blameless and instill, allow His Son to go to the cross and to suffer and to be nailed there to die for sins. Sin is an ugly thing, and the wrath of God is revealed from heaven. One, by God showing you how ugly it is, He gave His only begotten Son to do away or to pay for the sin. God doesn't close His eyes and act like it's not happening. God is long-suffering, and you and I mistake His long-suffering. What we think is we're getting away with it. I know many people today who worship Satan. I know many people today who worship all sorts of false idols and images. And nothing happens to them. They seem to be healthy like me. They have jobs. They get more money most of the time. They seem to do okay. IRS sends them their returns back when it's time. And they seem to be doing the same as me. You know, if God zapped you with 70,000 volts of electricity every time you thought the wrong thing, how many, you know, in traffic, we'd be a mess, wouldn't we? Or every time you said the wrong words, or every time you did something that was against His will, it'd be a pretty painful life, wouldn't it? Go ahead and admit it, I won't look. Yes, it would. But you see, God, in His mercy, is allowing you an opportunity to turn. He's allowing you an opportunity. Now, if you were shocked severely each time you thought something or said something or did something wrong, pretty soon you'd be thinking pretty well, acting pretty well, and talking really nicely, scared to death to breathe. True? At least I got my health. They can't take that from me. But God is so patient with us. He gives you chance after chance after chance to turn around. But God hates some things. Did you know that? Jesus hates the same things. So let me read to you in Hebrews 1:9. This is speaking about Jesus. You have loved righteousness and hated iniquity. Therefore God, even thy God, hath anointed thee with oil of gladness above thy fellows. Surprising to for you maybe to note that God hates certain things. For instance, Proverbs 8:3. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. The reverence of the Lord is to hate evil and pride and arrogancy and evil ways, and the froward mouth do I hate, God says. Zechariah 8:17. Let none of you imagine evil in your hearts against his neighbor, and love no false oath. For all these things, or all these are things, excuse me, that I hate, saith the Lord. Romans 12:9. Let love be without hypocrisy or dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil. Stick to or cleave to that which is good. Hate that which is evil. Revelation chapter 2, verse 6. Jesus, having John write a letter to the Ephesian church. Remember, he said to the Ephesians, you've left your first love. Remember your first works. Repent from how you are now and repeat those first works again. Do again those first works. And a little further down in the letter to the Ephesians, Jesus says in verse 6 of chapter 2, Revelation 2, but this you do have. I can say this in your favor, that you hate the deeds of the Nicolaitans, which I also hate. It may surprise you to know that God, who is perfect and does everything perfect all the time, He hates certain things. Now, each thing that I read to you makes it clear to you that we should hate what God hates. And God doesn't hate people. God hates the sin, and He loves the sinner. He doesn't love what I'm doing, but he loves me. He doesn't love what you're doing, but he loves you. And because he does love you, he sent his son to pay the price. Now, if you keep doing it and reject Jesus, understand that the wrath of God is revealed. Trouble's coming, and if you don't believe it, read the last book in the Bible, the book of Revelation, and quit trying to spiritualize it and take it literally at every point where it's written literally. There are a couple of places where God will tell you this is symbolic. Otherwise, you're looking at literal stuff. And literally, in heaven, on that altar where the blood is sacrificed, the blood of Jesus Christ, of course, is represented, God, who kindled that fire under the altar, has one take from under the altar that fire and pour it on the earth. And you see suffering and destruction and ugliness. It's coming. And see, the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against who? All ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. God hates ungodliness. What is ungodliness? When Moses came down from the mountain, he had two stones with him, those big old stone tablets, he called them. And you get this picture of an aspirin, but no, they were pretty good size. And on the one was written by God himself, the first four commandments, having to deal with our relationship, man's relationship to God. I am the Lord your God, you shall not have strange gods before me. And remember, those first four deal with man's relationship to God. Ungodliness, then, is sinning directly against God. And unrighteousness would be the following six commandments on the next piece of stone. Unrighteousness would be sins against our fellow man. We are ungodly at times and we are unrighteous at times. And God's wrath is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. God is not happy with the way things are going. That's the bad news. He is not happy with the lifestyles of many people that are in this room. You say, I'm a Christian, and if you say it, then there should be something to back it up. There should be enough evidence to convict you of it in court. That's what they used to ask us when we were younger. They'd say, Bob, are you a Christian? Yes. Is there enough evidence where you would be convicted of it in any court of law? In other words, to be convicted, it has to be beyond the shadow of a doubt. There should be no question of what you are. And it should show in everything you do. And otherwise, it's unrighteousness or ungodliness. And God's wrath is revealed. We're told that God's eyes are holy and they're pure. He cannot look upon evil, upon sin. And see, he's revealed against ungodliness and unrighteousness, all ungodliness and righteousness of men, who, by the way, hold the truth in unrighteousness. How do you hold the truth in unrighteousness? The word to hold means to suppress or to hold down. Then how do you hold the truth in unrighteousness? Well, a way to explain it would be, a little simpler way would be, get a picture of an old ship. Not the new ones, the modern that we do now, but old, maybe a pirate ship or a ship from way back before we had powered engines. And you'd see a helmsman, and his job would be to hold that helm, and he would aim that ship where he wanted it to go, in spite of what the currents were doing, in spite of what the waves were doing, in spite of maybe even what the wind was doing. The captain would say, hold your course, and he would fight with that helm and hold it in position, and that is what these people are doing. They are holding the truth in unrighteousness. When God says, you need to turn and come my way, they take that helm and they hold it, they suppress or they hold the truth in unrighteousness. I don't care what you say, we're going my way. God's wrath is revealed against all those who are trying to go their own way. They are opposing the truth and they are choosing to go their own way. If you are one of them, you can fight and you'll see what's coming your way pretty soon. But God's wrath is revealed. See, God does hate things. God has never changed. If you'll read the Old Testament, you'll see what God is like. If you'll read the New Testament, you will see what God is like. He's not one in the old, one in the new. He has never changed. God is the same always. There is no variableness, nor shadow of turning. There is not even a hint that he might turn a little bit. God does not change. Everything he does is good and perfect all the time, and everything he is good and perfect all the time. When he made the earth, it was good, it was right, it was perfect. He didn't mess it up. Sin has destroyed where we live. And because of sin, it's entered into the entire universe, not just the planet Earth. Well, we read this in verse 19. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath shown it unto them. Those people who are suppressing or holding the truth in unrighteousness, we read that that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath shown it unto them. Those people, have you ever heard someone say to you, I don't believe in God? You've probably heard people say that. I'm an atheist. The Greek, a meaning without, theist or theos meaning God. I am without God. Of course, that's a true statement. Yeah, you are without God. But that doesn't mean he doesn't exist. Many people say, I don't believe in God. Well, wait a minute. You are holding the truth in unrighteousness. You have set your course. You're going to hold that helm. And no matter what is clear and logical and right, you are still going to continue to fight to get your own way. Be careful. You may get it. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them. That simply tells you every one of us, you, me, all children, everywhere on the earth, is born knowing there is a God. Every human being that has ever been born has known deep inside their heart there is a God. Now we see this. That which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. How did he show it to them? For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. How do people know there's a God? They look at what he has created. They look around them at the earth, at the stars, at the universe, and they realize it. Now, some of you are old enough to remember those silly, silly science fiction movies from the 40s and the 50s. You know, the day the earth stood still, and those poor, poor special effects that young kids now laugh at. But do you notice something about from the 30s and the 40s and the 50s and now the 90s and beyond? Do you notice something? That science fiction has never changed? By that I mean everyone knows there's a God. And even when they say they don't believe in God, what are their space creatures like? Number one, they're always smarter than us. Always. They're more advanced and they're always more powerful. And one of the things that I think is funny is they're always uglier than we are. You think about that for a moment. They're powerful, they're advanced, they can do things, but they're really unattractive compared to us. Does it let you know what humans think about themselves? A little bit. Every one of those people that doesn't believe in God, that writes science fiction, knows something out there is bigger than me. Something is smarter, it's more advanced, it can get around and I can't. But I choose to say there's no God. But something in their heart tells them. And how do they know it? By what they see around us. You know, the Bible tells you that creation all around us testifies of God. Scientists today, and I know that you know this, scientists, many, it looks like most are coming to agree that somewhere back there, before we got here, now the argument is how long ago, but somewhere back there, this whole thing had a beginning. Even the ones that preach and teach evolution will say, yeah, I agree. Somewhere along the line, way back there, this thing had a beginning. Some of them call it a Big Bang theory. Somehow, it all started, some say it was billions upon billions, but somehow they're all coming to an agreement that this had to start somewhere. They don't know where the material came from to start it. They don't know exactly how the material got together to just boom into existence, but they're all beginning to realize what they've always known deep in their hearts way before they were scientists, that this thing started somewhere. Just think, God is telling you, you can see me, the invisible things of God. I'll read it to you. The invisible things of Him from the creation of the world are clearly seen. How big is He? How powerful is He? Being understood by the things that are made. His eternal power and His Godhead. You take a look around and see the universe that we live in, and you start to think, man, even scientists are saying it had to begin sometime. God is the one that began it. And God's going, yep, over here, me. Look this way. Look at the stars and see. The way it's described to us is, you take this piece of paper right here. That's very thin. The distance Earth. We live on Earth? It's been a long morning. Well, distance from the Earth, oh Lord, and the Sun is approximately 93 million miles. Oh, give or take a few. Right? You all know that. If this paper represents 93 million miles, that's 93 million miles thick. Are you with me? We're pretending. Then, from the Earth to the closest star, Alpha Centauri, to the closest star, this representing 93 million miles, you would take a stack of one of these, 31 feet high, and each one represents 93 million miles. That's just to get to the closest star. How big is God? When scientists start to measure it out, now they're telling us our galaxy is a joke compared to real big ones out there. We're living in this little frumpy thing, the Milky Way. And it's a little bitty thing. There's one of them that they've been watching out there, and you can't see it with the naked eye, but with their big telescopes, they're telling us now, it is, they estimate 150 trillion light years in distance. Not from us, but its size. 150 trillion light years from one end to the other. Light travels at approximately 186,000 miles per second. The speed that light travels in one full year, or the distance light travels in one full year, is a light year. 150 trillion light years from one end to the other of that universe. And that's not necessarily the biggest ones. Now, how big is God? God is saying, I did every bit of this. Scientists are saying now, it had to come from somewhere. They just want to fight about from where. God says, you take a look at the moon, the stars. You take a look at everything around you. You're going to know I'm here. Every man, woman, and child, even those in South America that you're worried about. What if they never hear about Jesus? Every one of them knows that there is a God. You can get into your plane or boat or car or whatever. Go find a tribe that no one has ever found. If you could communicate with them, they're going to tell you they have some sort of some power that they worship. Why is that? Because every one of them knows. There's something out there bigger than me. There is something out there more powerful than I am. There is something out there that I can't get to. You know why people do not want to admit that? Maybe some of you in this room, you say, I'm an atheist. Yeah, you know why? I know why you are. See, to admit there's a God, which I do, by the way, I have no doubt. To admit that there's a God, then that immediately shows me I am smaller and less significant than that God. Therefore, I must submit to Him. If He did all this, I'm under Him, and I must submit to Him. I can't have my own way. I am going to have to live by His rules. I'm going to have to conform to His way. It's His universe. It's His planet. I may not like the idea of breathing air, but the truth is, that's the only way it can be done, and so I have to submit to it. His rules become my rules because He's God. Now, for those that say there's no God, they say, I reject that idea. I don't believe there's a God. All they're saying is, I can do anything I want to do. I can think anything I want to think. I can have my own way. My will be done. And I don't care what everybody says is right or wrong or moral or immoral. I'm going to choose. And I don't want anything to hold me down to any kind of responsibility. Satanists, quote from their Bible, say to thine own heart, or say to thyself, I am my own redeemer. I submit to nobody. I'm in charge of me. My will be done. See, if you're going to say there's no God, all you're saying is, I reject what I know to be true, and I will not submit to anything or to anybody. Well, listen, Psalm 8, verses 3 through 4. When I consider that your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have ordained, I ask this question, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that you visit him? Psalm 19:1. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. You just take a look at around you and look at the handiwork of God. You will not be able to deny that he exists. He does exist. Acts chapter 14, verse 17. Nevertheless, God left not himself without witness in that he did good. He gave us rain from heaven and fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness. Every time you and I get vegetables from the garden, we know there's a God. Scientists are interesting critters because they're looking into outer space, and now they're looking into inner space. There are things in the inner space that scientists can't see, but they know are there. They know how you're built. They can split these things, but they can't see some of them. They just know that they're there. And you think the God of all creation created all things, visible and invisible. He's almighty. And if he is almighty, you and I are going to have to say, you know what? If there's a God, I submit to him. Or we're going to have to say, I just choose. That's not my truth. Then you're saying, my own will be done. Well, that's when we hold the truth in unrighteousness. I'm going to hold my course and I don't care. Yeah, but man, even your own heart is telling you, I don't care. I'm holding this course. I'm going this way. But God is saying, turn and come back to me where there is peace, where there is a guarantee of life eternal, to live with the God who made you, created you for his glory forever and ever and ever. And of his kingdom there will be no end. God will rule and does and will always, has always and will always. Now, because that, he says this, so that they are without excuse. When you worry about people, because I do have Christians say, well, I'm worried about, there are so many tribes that don't know. Hey, listen, everybody knows in their heart of hearts that there's a God. And the whole world is without excuse. There is no excuse. That's what the Bible is clearly telling us. You know, basically, in case you hadn't caught on, first, it's kind of like going to the doctor. First, Paul says this, the doctor, you say, my finger hurts. And the doctor says, all right, man, tell me about you. Now, I want to get a case history. How long has your finger been hurting? How much does it hurt? When did you notice it started hurting? Now, has it been? And they get a case history. And once they figure all that out, what happens usually at some point is there's a diagnosis. They say, here's the problem. And then there's a remedy or a cure. That's what Paul's doing for us here. He's showing you that this has gone on. God's wrath is revealed from heaven. Jesus died on the cross. That's how much God hates sin and how much God loves you. But now you can hold the truth in unrighteousness. You can still fight to have your own way. But suffering and destruction will come from that. And he says this, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God. Neither were they thankful, but they became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Notice he says, when they knew God, they wouldn't glorify him. They just say, you know what? I don't care what my heart is saying. I don't even care what logic says. I choose to do my own thing and go my own way. Well, what happens when you do that? Some of you may have saying, that's what I've done. Well, then here's what happens. You are not glorifying God. or bringing him glory, which is why you were created, and you are unthankful. So Christian, be sure you and I are bringing glory to God, and be sure that we're thankful. Thank him for the little things, like air. I know it's a little thing, I mean, right? We just have to breathe. The little things, like when your blood is going through your system and you don't give it a thought because it's supposed to. Thank him for the health that you have now. Usually it's when we don't have our health, we go, what are you doing? Hey, I feel bad. Thank you that I feel good. Be thankful to God. Thank you for creating the way you created, because now we can run out back and at the right time of year plant this and that, and it grows into things that you can have, like watermelons and tomatoes, and it doesn't grow in a squash tub, and good things. Unless you like squash, then it grows into it. Radishes, they grow fast. I like that. See, they didn't glorify God, and they were not thankful. They became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. To become vain in your imagination means your thinking becomes vain. Vain means empty, useless, worthless. They become vain in their imaginations. You know, when they say, I'm not going to listen to God, I don't even believe there is a God, that means their thinking has become useless, worthless. And their foolish heart is darkened. To have your foolish heart darkened in our language means when you have rejected the truth, then the ability to recognize and receive the truth becomes severely impaired. So each time you hear, you know, there is a God and he's in control, and you say, man, I just choose not to listen to that. Your head becomes useless, vain. Your thinking is useless, no matter how intelligent you are. And your heart is darkened. It's harder and harder than to come to the truth. And like Pastor Chuck says, it's true. When God goes, anything goes. When you reject the truth, it's weird what people will then accept as their truth. And you remember Heaven's Gate people. They waited for that spaceship that was going to take them away. They all committed suicide to go meet up with the spaceship. And you think, what kind of loony would think that? When you reject the truth, your foolish heart is darkened, and you'll believe anything except the truth. Now, there's coming a time soon that God's going to give the whole world over to strong delusion that they should believe the lie. That's where we're at, guys. That's where we're at. The world is being given over to strong delusion. They're going to go for everything except for the truth, because their foolish hearts darken. And then we read this verse. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. We know what we're doing. We've got the technology. We're very intelligent. Here's our logic. Here's, and they become fools. They're vain as their imaginations. They're worthless. They're empty. They're useless. Their heart is darkened. Now in Psalm 14 verse 1. Very much quoted scripture. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none that doeth good. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. The word fool in that psalm means one who is senseless or literally, ready? Insane. Now, didn't Paul just say that in the book of Romans? He said, when they knew God, they glorified him not, neither were thankful, became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Vain in their imaginations. Vain means empty, worthless, useless. Now, God just said, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. The word fool means someone who is insane. Useless, vain, worthless. And so you can do all the scientific experiments you want. You cannot prove God away. He still exists. And you've got to make a choice at what you're going to do with him. He's on your hands. Jesus Christ right now is on your hands. You have to do something with him. You accept him and submit yourself to the authority of God, or you reject him and you hold the truth and unrighteousness and hold the helm and you go your own way. But you are going to do one of those two things. There's no middle of the road for any of us. But the fool, the insane, will say there's no God. Because they have to go against everything that's even a part of their core being. God created you, and He created you, and you know inside there is a power and an authority beyond you, and you've got a decision whether you will submit or hold the truth and righteousness and go your own way. We have to stop there this morning. We don't want to be fools. I don't know where you are. I don't think God has asked anybody to blindly accept anything. Somebody said to me once, "You mean you just want me by blind faith to trust in God?" I said, "Just what blind faith? Look around you. Look at the amazing things that God has done that science today still cannot explain. And science today still cannot copy. We are so dependent on science. It's become one of the newest religions of our time. But they still can't do what God can do. And these are little things for God. And He has said, the invisible things of God are clearly seen. You can't see God. But you can look around and see what God is like and what He can do, what He's capable of, and you're impressed. Remember, what you see when you go to these beautiful parts of the world, when you see this blue, clear blue water. I was in the Indian Ocean on the equator there in a little bitty island, and you could get in a little canoe and the sharks are everywhere, and you'd go out there in about 20 foot of water, and it was so clean, it looked like you could touch the bottom with your finger, and that water was about 20 feet deep. It's that clean. And I thought, man, wonder what it must have been like when it was good, when God first created it before sin came in and destroyed it and polluted it. I wonder what this earth must have looked like. This is a beautiful planet even now, and it's falling apart. The thing's getting old. And the God I serve is so big, He did every bit of it. Now, can He take care of a little problem like me? I think He can. Can He take care of any little problem I might have? I think so. When He creates galaxies that are over 150 trillion light years from one end to the other, He could probably handle my finances, I think, or my marriage, or my body, or my mind, or my anything. I think He is God, and He is good, and He is big. Have you been lately thankful to Him, glorifying Him, calling upon Him for the help that you really need? Or are you counting on doctors and lawyers and insurance companies? And I mean, what are you leaning on? What are you looking to? We need the Lord. And every one of us, I believe, knows He's out there. And remember, He hates sin. And so we want to avoid it. The only way to do that is to come to Jesus Christ and to submit to Him, to turn your life over and let Him run it His way. Thy will be done.